So we're on to Psalm 141. As an introductory thought, it seems that this psalm, we might be able to locate its origins, but there's all kinds of guessing going on, at the time of the Maccabean revolt. It seems to fit that quite well. The psalmist is under pressure, we'll see, to join forces with, and to quote the psalm, verse 4, with those who do guilty deeds. So people are doing things wrong, and he's under pressure to join them. Perhaps he's being pressured to join those collaborating with the Syrian rulers who were trying to undermine the Torah at the time of the Maccabees. So you'd probably know the story. When the Greeks came over, Alexander the Great took over this part of the world. Alexander, I don't know whether you'd know what happened, or he got some kind of typhoid fever or something. Okay. So he died quite quickly. And then the empire was divided up among his three main generals. One of them, Ptolemy, took over the Egypt part, and Seleucid took over the Syrian right across to the Indus River, that section, Turkey, what we'd call Turkey. So at first, the Ptolemies were stronger, and Palestine, or the whole nation, and was under the Egyptian control. But then, about the 198, I think it was, the Syrians moved in, and there was constant warfare. There were three or four wars through that century, or more, I think. And then they took over, but Rome was now lurking in the background. So whoever was going to run the place had to have Roman backing or kind of allowance or something like that. And Rome backed them, but for a lot of money. So the Syrians, while they had control of Palestine, and get an enormous tribute. So they wanted to get all they could. So one of the places they could get money from, of course, or they thought they could, was from the temple in Jerusalem. They wanted to take as much as they could from everybody. So they moved down to take control of the temple, and that's the time of the Maccabees, 168 BC. But as they came down, and they did take over, they introduced Greek games and arenas and sport and a theatre, a Greek way of life, and a lot of the Jews were very resistant to letting their culture be so dominated. It's all pretty modern, isn't it? This stuff is still happening. There's a group that I'm only suggesting it's likely. You make your own judgment when you read the psalm. But at this time, there are those who are holding to the Torah. They're called the Hasidim, the faithful ones. And they are the kind of forefathers of the Pharisees of the Gospel period. So these people who are not faithful or buying into the Greek way of life, perhaps, are enticing them with what the author calls the delicacies of a luxurious lifestyle. Try to win them over. So the author is severely tempted to go along with them, and hence the intensity of the plea which opens our psalm. So he tries to dissuade the evildoers, and when they fall, they'll realise that his advice was indeed, as he says, pleasant words, when they actually find that things turn against them. And he continues to pray against the disgraceful behaviour of those who are attempting to win him over to their cause. All of that is from an internal study of the psalm. It could be located in a number of places, of course, historically. And maybe the psalm has a history of being applied to different situations, and the psalm we've got is the latest rewriting of it in view of this. I'm only suggesting the Maccabean period. Pretty good reasons for doing so, but it's still a guess. So let's start the psalm. I call upon you, Yahweh. Come quickly to me. Listen to my voice when I call to you. Let my prayer be counted as incense before you, and the lifting up of my hands as an evening sacrifice. read behind those words too, and you'll see some reasons for my earlier suggestion. It might be that the author is in Jerusalem, in which case, or in thereabouts, in which case the implication is that there's no incense at the moment. And the implication is that there's no evening sacrifice. Maybe he can't get to it, but maybe it doesn't exist. And that would fit perfectly with the Maccabean period. No prophets, no sacrifice, because the temple was taken over by the Syrians. So it may well be that he's praying that even though he can't go to the temple now, for whatever reason, when he lifts up his hands in prayer, the position you know that the Jews prayed with, and you see it in the early catacombs, the Christians followed that, in Rome did anyhow, because it was a Jewish Christian community in Rome, largely. So may that be my incense, lifting up my hands be an evening sacrifice. The evening sacrifice was about the ninth hour, something like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mid-afternoon. And here's a statement in the second book of Kings, chapter 16. King Ahaz commanded the priest Uriah, saying, upon the great altar offer the morning burnt offering and the evening grain offering. Part of their ritual practice. Ezra, the time, middle of the 5th century, the priest who brought the Torah back to Jerusalem, and that's when Judaism really got going as Judaism. At the evening sacrifice, I got up from my fasting. And here's the book of Daniel, which belongs to the period of the Maccabees. Gabriel, whom I had seen before in a vision, came to me in a swift flight at the time of the evening sacrifice. So, having asked God to come, this is his prayer. Set a guard over my mouth, Yahweh. Keep watch over the door of my lips. I should perhaps copy that and put it on the pulpit for myself. Don't be nodding, Mari. You put it there to make sure. Yeah. Say it a bit less and okay. Set a guard over my mouth, Yahweh. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Here's Sirach. Again, it's the same period, really, the beginning of the 2nd century BC. A bit earlier than the Maccabees, but already at the time of the Syrian control of Palestine. And he writes, who will set a guard over my mouth and an effective seal upon my lips so that I may not fall because of them and my tongue may not destroy me? Yahweh, Father and Master of my life, do not abandon me to their designs. Do not let me fall because of them. Who will set whips over my thoughts and the discipline of wisdom over my mind so as not to spare me in my errors and not overlook my sins? And that's pretty good advice too. Sirach chapter 22. I guess the problem is, if people are behaving bad, asked of us. So verse 4 reads of our psalm, do not turn my heart to any evil. He's obviously inclined to do it. There's a lot of attractions in going down that track. So don't turn my heart to an evil. Don't let me busy myself with wicked deeds in the company with those who do guilty deeds. Do not let me eat of their delicacies. Don't let me get persuaded to the luxuries and the pleasures that go with abandoning faith and joining with what's happening. So he wants Yahweh to keep guard not only over his mouth, but also over his heart, that he will not let attachment to pleasures distract him from the obedience to the Torah. And in verse 5, let the righteous strike me down, let the Hasidim, those who follow the Chesed of God, the faithful ones, correct me. So he'd prefer that the Hasidim strike him down than that he would betray the Torah. The Hasidim are determined to resist the aggressive cultural imperialism of Antiochus IV and to remain faithful to the covenant. The author needs their correction to strengthen him against the temptations of the good life. The book of Proverbs chapter 1 might pick up some of those themes. My child, if sinners entice you, don't consent. If they say, come with us, let's lie in wait for blood, let us wantonly ambush the innocent, like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit. The pit is, of course, the physical name for the burial place, and Sheol is the metaphysical name, if you like, the mythical place of the dead. We shall find all kinds of costly things. We shall fill our houses with booty. Throw in your lot among us. We will all have one purse. My child, don't walk in their way. Keep your foot from their paths. Their feet run to evil. Another image here, verse 5 still of the psalm. Never let the oil of the wicked anoint my head, for my prayer is continually against their wicked deeds. Just picking up some of those images of the oil anoint. It was perfumed oil. That must have been how they did things. You've got it here in our famous Psalm 23, the Good Shepherd. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup is overflowing. And Luke 7:46, the woman that came in to Jesus and anointed his feet and wept over him. And he says to Simon, Jesus, you didn't anoint my head with oil. It must have been the custom to do that. But she's anointed my feet with ointment. Verse 6. When they are given over to those who will condemn them, so he's assuming that the baddies will lose eventually, the ones that have given in to the Syrians, when the Syrians are repulsed, perhaps by the Maccabees, then they'll turn against these people who've kind of bought the dominating culture. So when they are given over to those who will condemn them, then they'll learn that my words were pleasant. Like a rock that one breaks apart and shatters on the ground, so shall their bones be strewn at the mouth of Sheol. Can't you see why we needed Jesus? And why do we keep forgetting him? The psalmist anticipates the judgment of God upon them. They'll be flung headlong as from a precipice into the gaping hole of Sheol. They're hurled over the precipice like Jezebel from the balcony. You might know that story in the second book of Kings. And I'll conclude with a comment from Obadiah again, the first verses 3 and 4. Your proud heart has deceived you. You that live in the clefts of the rock, whose dwelling is in the heights, you say in your heart, who'll bring me down to the ground? Though you soar aloft like the eagle, though your nest is set among the stars, from there I will bring you down, says Yahweh. And the last verses of the psalm, verses 8 to 10, read, but my eyes, so here we get, my eyes are turned towards you, O God, my Lord. In you I seek refuge. Don't let me leave me defenseless. Keep me from the trap they have laid for me and from the snares of evildoers. Let the wicked fall into their own nets while I escape. So he's under a lot of pressure to conform to what's going on around him and let go his faith, but he's pleading with God to hold him fast. And I'll finish with Jeremiah 49. The terror you inspire and the pride of your heart have deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rock, who hold the height of the hill, although you make your nest as high as the eagles, from there I will bring you down, says Yahweh. Obadiah, Jeremiah, using similar imagery.